welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's the holidays, which means in addition to all the food, family, and shopping, many of you are looking forward to getting out to the movies, and the studios are counting on it. Whether it's a blockbuster family affair like the latest Disney Pixar release or art house Oscar bait, theaters are packed with options for the holidays.
Bienvenidos a todos! Who's ready for some música? It's the battle of the bands, amigos.
I would do anything to sing with you guys again. Anything.
You guys, every year the USO puts on this performance to support the troops in Europe. What if I could get us an invite?
Yeah, I've suddenly got a bunch of free time, so... Hell yeah!
This is a true story, but except for my own, I've changed all the names.
And Molly, my weekly poker game is moving to the Cobra Lounge. You'll help run it.
I was in a room with movie stars, directors, and business titans. They were going all in, all the time.
Thank you, Molly.
This is for you.
Thank you so much.
We are the spark that'll light the fire that'll burn the First Order down.
Come on!
This is not going to go the way you think.
The cause of all the catastrophes we are seeing today is overpopulation. We are proud to unveil the only practical remedy to humanity's gravest problem. Are you ready, Doctor?
Yes, I'm ready.
Wow. Downsizing takes the pressure right off.
Plus, you're really making a difference.
You mean all that crap about saving the planet?
Yeah.
Downsizing is about saving yourself. We live like kings. Got the best houses, best restaurants, Cheesecake Factory. Got three of them.
That gives you a little bit of a preview of what you can expect. And joining us now to help choose the best of the bunch are Chicago-based critics Keith Phipps of Up Rocks and Katie Reif from the AV Club. Hey, Keith. Hey, Katie. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hello.
Hey, thanks.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
And to you.
Keith, let me ask you, is this your favorite time of the year just because of the movies?
Yes and no. It's suddenly like I'm just behind the eight ball constantly trying to catch up with everything. I mean, just even putting this list together is like, oh, I haven't seen that yet. I need to go see it. So, it's a little stressful. And it's, in addition to being a deluge of worthwhile movies.
Katie, what about you?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, from October all the way through the beginning of December is just wall-to-wall movies for me. One thing that I'm currently trying to figure out is we do a worst of the year list, and I'm trying to decide if I need to catch up, you know, with the best and the worst of the year. So.
Oh, and speaking of which, since we last talked, I have seen Get Out. Whoa, what a great movie.
It's so good, right?
It's so good.
I was so scared of being scared of it, and then I loved how scared I was of it, and it was fantastic.
I think we're going to see that come up quite a bit at end of the year talk, which isn't always the case when something's been released that early, but that movie is definitely stuck around in the mind of a lot of people.
Yeah, Katie, I mean, we're before we get to your holiday list, what do you think about the Oscar talk of the movies of the year, and sort of, if you haven't seen, and before we get to new releases, movies that you want to see before the end of the year?
Oh, wow. Well, I really want to see Phantom Thread, the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie. That one hasn't really screened much of anywhere yet. No real big film festival appearances, but I'm very, very excited about it. It's supposed to be Daniel Day-Lewis's last film performance. He says he's retiring after this. So, big, momentous occasion.
And we've got a clip of that we want to play. Let's hear the clip.
You can sew almost anything into the canvas of a coat. When I was a boy, I started to hide things in the linings of the garments. Things that only I knew were there. Secrets.
Good morning.
Will you have dinner with me?
Yes.
That's Phantom Thread. We are talking movies with Keith Phipps. He's the editorial director of film and television for Up Rocks. Katie Reif is with us as well. She's the news editor of AV Club. We are getting into their lists of holiday movies as well as talking movies in general. Katie, that sounds I don't know if it's creepy or eerie, or tell us a little bit more about Phantom Thread. What's it about?
Well, Phantom Thread, it's a film. It's set in the 1950s in London, and Daniel Day-Lewis plays a dressmaker that is sort of loosely based on some of the big couturiers of the 20th century. And Daniel Day-Lewis really throws himself into his roles, and so he studied fashion design and dressmaking before taking this. He's known for being a method actor, so he goes all the way. It's actually kind of a romantic drama as opposed to to creepy. It's about, you know, this famed dressmaker who meets a woman who he's kind of a playboy. He goes through a whole bunch of different girlfriends, and this one challenges him a little more.
All right. And as you said, is this Daniel Day-Lewis, of course, famous for how he throws himself into, I'm thinking of Lincoln. This is his last role, Katie?
Yeah, he publicly said he's going to retire after this. So.
Okay. Keith, do you believe that?
He's retired before. I'm not sure if this is sort of a boxer situation where you know, one retirement is, you know, you can never tell if it's an actual retirement or not. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure he has, you know, no compelling reason to keep acting if he's tired of it. He has plenty of other things he can do. He kind of took time off and became a cobbler for a while. So maybe he'll stick with dressmaking or something. Who knows? Either way, I'm looking forward to the film. And part of it, I mean, this you just laid out about everything anyone knows about this movie at this point, either, too. It's kind of shrouded in mystery beyond the basics of the plot. So it's another reason I'm very excited to see that one as well.
Because no one's had a chance to preview it at all, even you guys.
Right.
Huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this time of year also, Katie, we have a range of what we're going to call films versus movies, maybe. There's a lot of fun stuff. There's blockbusters. There's the popcorn films like Pitch Perfect 3. And then I don't know where Phantom Thread falls in along those lines. Katie, do you think this is the only time of year that we have such a mix of these kind of movies? Or do we, because I feel like we don't see this as much with the summer, for example.
Yeah, fall is traditionally what you would think of as prestige movie season because it's leading up to Oscar nominations is traditionally why you see so many of these, you know, more prestige dramas towards the end of the year. And critics put together their best of the year lists and critics associations vote. A whole bunch of nominations come out at the end of the year. So I believe that is why they're all sort of pushed towards the end of the year.
Ah, okay. So there's a little movie coming out. I think it's called Star Wars. Do you guys want to talk about that?
I always want to talk about Star Wars. I'm very excited to see this new one. It's written by Rian Johnson. It's definitely the biggest film he's ever made before. He debuted about a decade ago with this film called Brick, which is like this film noir set in high school. And he's made really, you know, terrific movies since then, including Looper, another science fiction movie. This is the biggest canvas he's ever gotten. And again, it's not Phantom Thread levels of mystery, but we really don't know much about the plot of this one either, or even really, you know, where the story's going to go.
Something inside me has always been there. But now it's awake. And I need help.
And I'm very much looking forward to it. I thought The Force Awakens was a really nice return for that series, and I enjoyed Rogue One, which seemed, you know, seems to show they're willing to take some chances with what Star Wars could be, and expect this one to be an interesting entry. And it's got porgs in it. Has everyone seen the porgs yet?
No. What are those?
Yes.
I know these adorable kind of like puffin, alien puffin type creatures. Everyone who has seen them has gone nuts over them. My kid has a toy porg already. That's become,
okay, so last time there was the super cute robot, the little round robot that rolled. So this time it's the porgs.
Yes, and possibly an evil BB-8 and some kind of snow some kind of space fox too, right, Katie?
Yeah, crystal foxes.
What?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So let me ask you just your opinion as you watched, when you have these incredible franchises like Star Wars, I always think I watch, and I love them. I am a huge fan of the franchise. Well, not the terrible ones, but, you know, all the other ones. And I wonder when I watch them, though, how many, I'm often irritated by what I feel like are the merchandise placements or the game placements within the movie. Do you guys notice those? Does that bother you?
Well, in terms of Star Wars, you know, the merchandising is pretty inseparable, and because they are very the plot details on Star Wars movies are always kept very tightly under wraps, where actors can't talk about them in interviews and things like that. So actually, one way that people try to tease out plot details about upcoming Star Wars movies is through the release of the toys. They have something called Force Friday that's a little earlier in the year, I think in September, where they put out the new round of Star Wars toys, and a lot of times that's your first glimpse at new characters.
Huh. Keith, what about you? What do you think?
I don't know. You're talking to someone who kind of grew up with Star Wars and Star Wars toys tied together, and now as a kid who I like to buy Star Wars toys for. So with that one, it doesn't particularly bother me. I think that the merchandising is kind of just, with those sorts of movies, it's become sort of entwined. It's when it gets tacky that it can be a problem. I mean, if you look at the Porgs as sort of a cynical, these will make great toys kind of move. But as long as they're fun on the screen, I'm not sure it really matters. I'm not all that bothered by it.
It says, I should point out, says the person who was an Ewok. I think like in fourth grade, I was an Ewok. So. I mean, this is the Porgs or the Ewoks of this generation, perhaps. Okay, so you guys have got some great lists here that I want to get into before the break. We have time, I think, to hit a couple of these. So, Kitty, you mentioned Phantom Thread. Keith, what are you looking forward to on your list?
Well, there's a couple I can talk about that I've seen already. Right now, my favorite movie of the year is Lady Bird, which is Greta Gerwig's directorial debut, an actress who's co-written a couple of movies and co-directed a film before this. But this is a solo directing debut, to be accurate. But it's sort of an autobiographical coming-of-age story set in Sacramento in the early 2000, starring Saoirse Ronan as an eccentric high school senior.
We've got a clip of it, actually. Let's play a little bit of that, and then you can explain a little bit more about the story.
I want to go where culture is,
but
like
how
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such a
or at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire,
really,
where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You can't even pass your driver's test.
Because you wouldn't let me practice
the way
enough.
That you work, or the way that you don't work, you're not even worth state tuition, Christine.
My name is Lady Bird.
Well, actually, it's not, and it's ridiculous.
Call me Lady Bird like
Christine.
You said you would.
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail, and then back to City College, and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
That's a clip from Lady Bird. We're talking holiday movies with Keith Phipps and Katie Reif from Up Rocks and the AV Club. Keith, so that gives a little sense of the dynamic of the movie.
Yeah, that's Saoirse Ronan as Lady Bird and Laurie Metcalf as her mother. And you kind of get a sense from that just how good they are together and how there's this wonderful relationship that's at once contentious and loving plays out over the course of the film. And it's all part of this coming-of-age story as she goes through her senior year of college. And what's wonderful about it is I expected to like it, and it stuck with me a lot longer than I even expected it. It's a very rich film. It's an example of how you take a very specific, you find the universal in a very specific story. It's so much about her background growing up at a particular time in a particular place, but I think a lot of people are going to see their own stories in this. It's a really remarkable film, and I look forward to seeing it again.
Kitty, have you seen Lady Bird?
No, it's at the top of my list. I've been kind of waiting to, you know, just really go to the theater and absorb it because I graduated from high school in 2002, which is the year before Lady Bird graduated from high school. And I was kind of a moody, eccentric teenager myself. So I'm expecting to have some feelings about it.
It's interesting what you said, Keith, about a film staying with you after. I felt that way about The Florida Project. When I was watching it,
oh, for sure.
I just loved how it was shot, and I wasn't sure how I felt about the story. And I felt it was like one of those films that a couple days later, I realized how much I was still thinking about it and processing it and how much I enjoyed it sort of more afterwards than almost even during.
Okay, I warned you. One drip and you're out.
Oh, come on.
Out now.
It's going to melt outside.
It's melting inside, too.
But, Bobby.
Out. Thank you very much.
You're not welcome.
Yeah, that's a wonderful movie from Sean Baker, and that's another film I'm looking forward to seeing again. And it's one of those films where you kind of have to wait till it's over to step back and see how it was all put together and how things you didn't understand the first time you saw them figured into the larger scheme of the movie. And I know that movie is such a nice balance of, it's really funny, and like the kids have like this innocent world of their own, get wrapped up in the wondrousness of their experience, but also at the same time kind of realizing the difficulties that surround them.
Yeah, that's
when I interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the funny detail from that, when I interviewed him, he said one of the biggest influences on it was The Little Rascals, which you can totally see when you think about it.
Yeah, the gang of kids. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Uproxx's Keith Phipps, AV Club's Katie Reif. They've put together a whole holiday list of movies. We're talking about movies maybe you've missed over the year, as well as upcoming releases. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Tuning into The 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking movies with Keith Phipps. He's the editorial director of film and television for Uproxx, and Katie Reif, she's news editor of the AV Club. They've put together a great list of holiday movies, some that are already out, some that are coming out. We'll have all of that at our website at 21stshow.org. We'll tweet out the list as well if you follow 21SG Show. Katie, you've got a pick on your list, Mudbound. That's on Netflix right now. What's that about?
That one, yes, it's out on Netflix and it's out in a few select theaters, a little more than a dozen theaters, so not many places. That one is about, it's based on a novel, about two families in rural Mississippi just before and just after World War II. One of the families is white and owns the land, and the other family is black and works the land, and it's sort of about the fraught relationship between the two sides and how World War II sort of upended the dynamic of established racial dynamic of the South.
We would get this hole dug before the storm hit.
It's a slave's grave.
How do you know that?
Shot in the head. Must have been a runaway. That settles it.
Settles what?
I ain't burying my father in no slave's grave. Nothing he would have hated more.
Wow, that sounds interesting. There's a movie that both of you have on your list. It's called Call Me By Your Name. We've got a clip of it. Before we get to the clip, Keith, is there anything you want to set up about the movie before we play it for everybody?
I mean, just briefly, it's a new film from, I got to pronounce this right, Luca Guadagnino. An Italian director, and it's another coming of age story of a different kind. Stars Timothy Chalamet who's also in Lady Bird, as a teenager who is living in northern Italy with his professor father, played by Michael Stuhlbarg, and his summer is kind of disrupted by the arrival of Armie Hammer as his father's assistant. And I'll go to the clip from there.
That sounds different. Did you change it?
Well, I changed it a little bit.
Why?
I just played it the way Liszt would have played it if he'd altered Bach's version.
Play that again.
Play what again?
The thing you played outside.
Oh, you want me to play the thing I played outside?
Please. Ah.
can't believe you changed it again.
Oh, I changed it a little bit.
Yeah, why?
I just played it the way Buzzoni would have played it if he'd altered Liszt's version.
And what is wrong with Bach, the way Bach would have played Bach's
version? Bach never wrote it for the guitar. In fact, we're not even sure Bach wrote
it
at all.
Forget I asked.
But that's a clip from Call Me By Your Name. We're talking movies with Katie Reif and Keith Phipps. Katie, why did Call Me By Your Name end up on your list of a must-see?
Call Me By Your Name, it's a really beautiful, like, emotional film. And if you like to cry at movies, then you will cry at this movie. It's also getting a lot of awards attention. The Independent Spirit Awards come out, which is sort of an early indicator of what's going to dominate awards season. And it was the biggest, the most nominated film this year, 5 nominations.
Wow. And Keith, what do you like about this, and how is this different from Lady Bird?
Oh, well, it's a very different story, but it's also another, like I said, coming-of-age story set in a different particular time and place, in this case, Northern Italy in the early 80s. And it is a deeply emotional movie. A romance develops between Hammer and Chalamet's May's character, and it's kind of something neither of them saw coming. And it's it plays out. It's kind of like circling back to Florida Project. It's one of those movies where it creeps up on you. Like, it's kind of like this slow, moody, slow and kind of atmospheric and kind of relaxed summer breeze of a movie where this relationship slowly develops, and then toward the end it just becomes emotionally just really powerful. Michael Stuhlbarg plays Chalamet's character's father, and has just, occasionally you see a performance that gets singled out for awards consideration, and they're not in the film that much, and you wonder why. And this is, he's in the film, he's kind of in the background for most of the film. He has one scene in this movie that is really some of the best acting I've seen in a long time. You'll know it when you get to it.
Yeah, wow. And see, speaking of movies that make you cry, this reminds me of last year. I was watching Lion on a plane and then just started sobbing by the end of it. And the guy next to me just put his arm around me because I was crying so much just because it got to the end of the movie. And I just was like, but yeah, maybe this is also a category of movies you should not watch on a plane if you don't want to be crying in front of other people. Katie, there's another movie on your list. It's called Shape of Water. This is a very visual movie. We actually, when our producers were doing this, can you explain why we couldn't play a clip of this?
Well, The Shape of Water is one that I have yet to see, but it's one of my most anticipated of the year because, as you mentioned, it's directed by Guillermo del Toro, who made Pan's Labyrinth, he made Crimson Peak, and he's known as just a really exquisite visual stylist. The level of detail in his films is always just above and beyond beautiful, and his cinematography. And yes, maybe it's a little bit cheesy to say, but they're a feast for the eyes, Guillermo del Toro's films.
Yeah. Well, Keith, what else is on your list?
Oh, what else is on my list? I have a film I haven't seen yet, but I'm dying to, that everyone who has seen really loves, is The Disaster Artist, which is James Franco is adapting a book about an actor's experience working on The Room, which is now kind of everyone's go-to example of a film so bad it's good. It's sort of this very odd movie made by someone who had no business making a movie named Tommy Wiseau, an eccentric, sort of inscrutable personality who kind of rented out space for it, and it played in L.A. for a long time, and it kind of developed this cult following. And it really is a film like no other. And this is a film about the making of that film. Franco plays Wiseau. Dave Franco plays Greg Sestero, the actor who wrote the book about it. Everything about it looks pretty fun and entertaining. And it certainly looks like it's a fascinating story. I'm interested to see how it's, it translates to a film.
The Room has become a phenomenon on the level of Rocky Horror Picture Show, where they'll have interactive screenings where people bring props and yell lines at the screen. It's become a full-on midnight movie phenomenon, yeah. And between The Disaster Artist and The Deuce, this is the year that James Franco finally won me over, so good.
No, that's I'm still waiting for that to happen, and I'm not optimistic, so we'll see about that. You've got, Katie, we've got another clip from a movie, I, Tonya. Do you, Margot Robbie's in this, playing Tonya Harding, so I'm just going to leave that as a setup before we hear a little bit of it.
There's no such thing as truth. Everyone has their own truth. I was the best figure skater in the world at one point in time. I mean, come on! What kind of friggin' person bashes in their friend's knee? Who would do that to a friend?
Okay, that's I, Tanya. Katie, can you remind people who are not familiar with the story of Tanya Harding what this is about?
Yes. In the 90s, at the U.S. Figure Skating Championship, Nancy Kerrigan was attacked. She was bashed in the knee. I think it was with a pipe or a crowbar, something like that, which would disqualify her and brought one of her competitors, Tanya Harding, into the spotlight since Nancy couldn't compete. And the story was that Tanya Harding's ex-husband attacked Kerrigan to give Harding an advantage. It was a real big scandal at the time.
What are you looking forward to about this movie? I feel like there's already been other movies about this, right? Or maybe they've only been in like the Lifetime category.
Yeah, like this is like a prestige biopic with really good actors in it is the thing. Yeah, like it's not a Lifetime movie treatment. It's more of a very... it's got some black comedy elements to it, but it's also, it dives into the relationship between Tanya Harding and her ex-husband, which was very, very abusive. So it's sort of about, you know, that abusive relationship and then also the events that kind of thrust Tanya Harding in the spotlight. But what I'm looking forward to about it is there's some Margot Robbie in the lead performance, and Allison Janney plays her mom, who's also a pretty terrible person. So those are just actors who I am really interested in seeing throw themselves into these characters.
Yeah, we just have about a minute left. Keith, your last pick was Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Right. It's out now. You can go see it. It's a new film from Mark McDonough, who's a playwright turned director. It stars Frances McDormand as a woman who, seeking justice for her daughter who was raped and killed, takes out the three billboards of the title, demanding justice from the local police. And it sounds like a very simple woman smashes the, you know, up against a corrupt system movie, but it's really much more complicated than that.
I'd do anything to catch the guy who did it, Mrs. Hayes, but when the DNA don't match no one who's ever been arrested, and when the DNA don't match any other crime nationwide, and when there wasn't a single eyewitness from the time she left your house to the time we found her, well, right now, there ain't too much more we can do.
Could pull blood from every man and boy in this town over the age of 8.
There's civil rights laws prevents that, Mrs. Hayes. And what if he was just passing through town?
Pull blood from every man in the country, then.
And what if he was just passing through the country?
If it was me, I'd start up a database. Every male baby that's born, stick him on it. And as soon as he'd done something wrong, cross-reference it, make 100% certain it was a correct match, then kill him.
Yeah, well, there's definitely civil rights laws prevents that. I'm doing everything I can to track him down. I don't think those billboards is very fair.
The time it took you to get out here whining like a bitch, Willoughby, some other poor girl's probably out there being butchered right now. But I'm glad you got your priorities straight. I'll say that for you.
McDormand is amazing, and as are Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell in a cast that doesn't have a weak performance in it. So I definitely would recommend that one. It's sort of this walks a line between black comedy and tragedy, and it does it very well.
Right. So lots of great movies here that are out, that are coming out, that are able to for you to see over the holidays. Everything from Star Wars to, as we just heard, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I want to thank Keith Phipps. He's the editorial director of film and television from UpRocks. I want to thank Katie Reif. She's the news editor of the AV Club. Both of them put together these lists for us. We'll tweet them out as well. If you haven't been taking notes, no worries. It'll also be at our website, 21stshow.org. Katie, Keith, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, anytime.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Books can take us to distant lands, serve as escapes from our hyper-mediated world, and connect us with people we never have a chance to meet, as well as teach us lifelong lessons. And they also make pretty good gifts. So as it's the time of year when you are brainstorming gift ideas, maybe even a thoughtful book for someone, we thought we would help you with this. And we've assembled a team of book experts from around Illinois. Joining us in our Urbana studios is Nanette Donahue. She's the assistant manager manager of adult services at the Champaign Public Library. Children's librarian Jesse Wire is on the line from the Bloomington Public Library, and on the line from Chicago. And the bookseller is Portia Turner, an independently owned bookstore in Chicago's Lincoln Square neighborhood. Nanette, Jesse, Portia, welcome to the 21st. Happy holidays.
Hi.
Happy holidays.
Oh, thanks. You as well.
So as we're talking about good book ideas for the holidays, I want to ask you guys first just a general question about whether you feel, Nanette, let's start with you. Do you feel like you have to know someone really well to pick out a book for them?
Not always. I think if you have a good take on people's interests, then nonfiction is a really easy thing to buy. Fiction, I think, is a little tougher. I suggest a lot of fiction to readers who visit the library, but when it comes to suggesting fiction titles as gifts, it's a stumper for me because it's so easy to go wrong. If you're buying a book for somebody who's a voracious reader, chances are if it's a general mainstream title, they may have already read it or they may already know about it and not be interested in it. But nonfiction, I think it's something that's a treat for people.
What about you? What do you think?
I think it's really fun to buy something for someone you don't know a lot about. Just having a basic idea about them, even if it's not much, can give you something to recommend. Like if someone says, I don't know anything about them, but they like horses, we can find them something that has horses, and that makes the person feel so special because they'll think, yeah, you didn't know me very well, but you knew a detail about me and you were able to grab onto that. And it's just really exciting, I think, to recommend to people who aren't known very well.
Nana, do you have specific recommendations you were about to add?
I just think that it's tougher to give fiction as a gift because nonfiction, like Portia said, if you know something about what somebody likes, you can find a book on that topic pretty easily. Fiction tends to be a little more subjective, and that's the issue that I always have with it.
And Jesse, what about with kids?
I actually think kids are a little easier. They're a little less picky, you know. Everything's still new to kids, so almost anything you get them, even if they're already familiar with it, it could be like something they already enjoy. So I think it's a little easier. And then also, I think, you know, when you're getting a gift from someone, maybe it's something you wouldn't normally read, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you get out of your comfort zone a little.
And let me ask all of you, and let's start, Nanette, with you again. Why do you think books are good gifts to give to people?
I think it's because they're a treat. For a reader, there is nothing more special than having a shelf full of books and having new things to add to it. They can expand your horizons, broaden your perspective. I think books are a wonderful gift, and there's something that's a combination of a physical item and an experience.
And Portia, do you think there's a gift? Do you think there's an etiquette to this in terms of giving books? I always worry about giving someone a paperback versus a hardcover, especially when it comes to kids' books. Do you think they have to be fancy, especially if they're a holiday present?
I don't think they have to be fancy. Usually when it comes to books, if it's out in paperback, that means it's been out for a while and it's well-loved. And so when I get a paperback, I know that it's a book that somebody really cared about and that's really special. And then hardcovers are beautiful, so I don't think you can go wrong either way.
And Jesse, what do you think, especially when it comes to kids' books? I have a hard time with this because I often want to buy the paperback, but then I worry, especially with ages, if that's something that's going to last.
I agree. You can't really go wrong. Kids, by nature, are a little destructive. So the books are going to be well-loved. I think that may be a better way to put it, regardless of how you get, you know, what format you get them in. So I think if you want to get the paperback, I say go for it. The kids are still going to enjoy it, and the hardback won't last a ton longer, probably. They tear the pages and stuff still. I say just go for it.
We're talking holiday books with two librarians, Jesse Wire from the Bloomington Public Library and Nanette Donahue from Champaign Public Library, as well as with Portia Turner. She's from the bookseller in Lincoln Square in Chicago. When we come back, they have all created great lists for us. We're going to go through all of that. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
The Thanks for tuning into this holiday edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking books as gifts with two librarians, Nanette Donahue and Jesse Dwyer from the Champaign Public Library and the Bloomington Public Library. Also on the line with us from the independent bookstore in Chicago and Lincoln Square, the bookseller is Portia Turner. They have all created some great lists for us here to give ideas for you. Let's start, Portia, with you, and let's start with young adults, because we've got kids books, we've got young adult books, and we've got adult books. Actually, let's start with the youngest. Let's start with children's. Jesse, you have a book that you recommend for one of your favorites for kids, Snapsy the Alligator and His Best Friend Forever. And I love this, probably. Why'd you pick that one?
I really like it. I actually did this in story time for some preschoolers, and they really enjoyed it, so I figured I'd put it on the list. Snapsy the Alligator and His Best Friend Forever, probably, by Julie Flacco, illustrated by Tim Miller, just published in October 2017, probably preschool to first grade range. And this is the second picture book in what hopefully will become an ongoing series. And Snapsy is a lovable curmudgeon. He's an alligator. And he has a very enthusiastic chicken friend named Bert. And Snapsy spends most of
that
the
he
book
doesn't
want
to eat. I feel like I should point out.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, that is good. There are many children's picture books sort of ignore that fact when you anthropomorphize and various things. But yes, in this one, yes, they are friends mostly. But yeah, Snapsy spends most of the book trying to convince Bert. You know, he just wants to be left alone. But then when that finally happens, he starts missing his friends. So I like it because the art's fun. You know, Snapsy the Alligator walks upright on his hind legs and has like a collar and tie for clothes, which is, you know, the symbol for boring adult kind of in a book. So this is another one I think kids will like because it's silly, and then parents will like because they might know someone who is either one or both of those characters. Or maybe the parents themselves are one of those characters.
Okay. So we've created two categories here of new books and always good books. Portia, for young adults, what's your favorite new book recommendation that you came up with?
My favorite one right now is Warcross by Marie Lu. I'm not usually a big science fiction fantasy reader, but this one just sucked me in and didn't spit me out until the end, and I was still reeling afterwards. It takes place in pretty much our world, but with more advanced technology. And it follows just the most diverse cast of characters I've seen in a long time as they deal with this virtual reality world and deal with what's real and what's not and questions of technology and privacy, which I think is essential for teens today.
And in that age, and so this is a teenage age, what age would you recommend this for?
Yeah, so this is a teenage-aged book. I would probably say 14 and up, but it really there's nothing that happens in it that can't be read by younger audiences. I think it would just be enjoyed more by the older end of YA. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And Nanette, what about, and we have a question for you before I ask you about your new picks. What do you think about giving adults YA novels for holiday gifts?
I think there are a lot of adults who really love YA novels. And if you're giving a gift to somebody who has that taste, or if you have a YA novel that is fantastic for all ages, I think it's a perfectly respectable gift.
Right. What would you recommend among your new book picks that you pick first in that?
The one that I'm thinking of that's great for book lovers is Paperbacks from Hell, The Twisted History of 70s and 80s Horror Fiction by Grady Hendrix. He's also the author of a couple of really great comic horror novels, and he has this real love for campy horror fiction. And this is his first nonfiction book, and he starts off showcasing a pulp novel that features Nazi leprechauns, and the collection just takes off from there. It could have very easily devolved.
I'm sorry, I have to stop you. You said Nazi leprechauns.
Nazi leprechauns.
Okay. Just to make sure. Go ahead.
You know, this could have really easily turned into a let's make fun of pulp fiction paperback covers, but as he writes these plot summaries and as he discusses these books, you really get a feel for how much he loves this genre and how much he respects the work that these pulp authors have done. It's really delightful. You don't have to like horror to enjoy this collection. It's just sort of a love letter to a genre that many people loved back in the 70s and 80s.
And you also have on your list Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip Hop History. Why'd you pick that one, Nanette?
I am a big rap and hip hop fan, and I thought this was just such an exciting book. Chuck D from Public Enemy, he's charting the history of rap and hip hop from 1973 when DJ Kool Herc founded hip hop in New York City all the way through the end of December of last year. He covers all of the greatest albums, performances, all the beefs, along with his own personal reminiscences about the genre and what was going on during the last 30 years of hip hop. It's really a great book for fans, and it's like a stroll down memory lane as you page through it, and you're reminded of all of these great albums and all of this great music.
Portia, have you, I don't know if that's a popular one at the bookseller, do you guys seeing people buying that one?
I honestly have not seen that one. It sounds awesome, but our demographic, for some reason, doesn't seem to buy in music books that often, but that's definitely one I want to look into now, though.
Okay, good. Nana, what's in your category for always good?
One of my favorite gift books to suggest last year is a massive Chinese cookbook. I love giving and receiving cookbooks for Christmas and for holiday gifts and for birthday gifts. It's called All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China by Carolyn Phillips. She studied as an exchange student in 1970s Taipei and became fascinated with Chinese cooking. What I love about this book is that it really explores the different geographic variations in Chinese cuisine, and each of the recipes she presents talks about the history and the significance of the dish in its particular culture. It's a really, really beautiful book. It expands our idea of what Chinese cuisine involves and what it means, and I think I just love it.
And I bet it has lovely photos as well.
It really does. It's a beautifully presented book. It's really big, too.
So that's All Under Heaven, Recipes from the 35 Cuisines of China by Carolyn Phillips. Those are some of the picks from Nanette Donahue from Champaign Public Library. The librarians and, well, all three of our guests, our book experts, have put together all of these lists. We will have them all online. So if you're listening, do not worry about writing down all of these titles. You can head to our website at 21stshow.org, or you will be tweeting them out as well if you follow us at 21stshow. So that's some of Nanette's picks. Jesse, let's go back to kids' books. We talked about Snapsy the Alligator. That's kind of preschool, first grade. What about some new books that are more maybe preschool or kindergarten, maybe not? I don't know how many of them are picture books or shorter stories that you really like.
Sure. For the shorter books, there is one that's new that was just published in October 2017. I would say preschool, kindergarten range also, by Debbie Ridpath Ohi. It's called Sam and Eva, and it's two children basically learning to work together through art. So the illustrations are wonderful. Obviously, it's crucial to the story. It revolves around characters' interaction with art and each other. So one of them is sort of hesitant to want to play with the other one, that's Sam is hesitant, and Eva's very persistent, and they eventually start making a story with their art, a collaborative story. And at first it's very like versus Sam versus Eva, and then they start to build together, and then at the end they start all over on a brand new collaborative from the beginning piece of art. So it's very like working together, overcoming things through art, which I really like the message of.
You had another book on your list, Jesse, I wanted to ask you about. It's actually by Victoria Jameson. She's the author of the Newbery Award-winning Roller Girl graphic novel. This is All's Fair in Middle School. Is this another graphic novel?
It is. This is another graphic novel. It's very solid. I like Jameson a lot. She, if you haven't read Roller Girl, definitely pick that up. This one, I think, is it's a coming-of-age graphic novel, which are becoming more popular with the middle school crowd, which, you know, that hits close to home for that age group, so it's no surprise. But with this, you get the added bonus of graphics. So it has all the traditional elements you'd expect, bullying and confused hormones and conformity and, you know, making obvious mistakes and then trying to right the wrongs, all of that. But the setting is what really makes this stand out for me. The main character's family works at a Renaissance fair, which, you know, is a source of fun and pride and even embarrassment in times for a heroine, but, you know, there's slaying dragon metaphors and all that. The Renaissance fairs, you get a behind-the-scenes notes on how they operate, which I think is fun, and it's really just a fun take and a fresh setting for a familiar genre.
Portia, how popular are graphic novels, especially now for we're talking about young adult or middle-aged readers?
Oh, they are incredibly popular. The amount of them that are out there have just expanded in the past couple years, and we have kids who come in and that's what they read. They've read through our entire section and are looking for more, and they're coming out at a great speed. And I'm actually really impressed with how great these graphic novels are. There's really well-told stories, beautiful drawings, and kids are reading because of them.
Yeah, it's kind of a serious one, but one that I've gifted to my nephews has been March, which is the graphic novel that's sort of the history of the civil rights movement that John Lewis did. Portia, I wonder for you, as you think about young adults and sort of middle age, what you have. You mentioned War Cross. What else is on your list that you wanted to talk about when we're thinking about younger adults?
I'm thinking about younger adults. This one actually doesn't come out until December 19th, but it's before Christmas, so I'm going to count it. Stephanie Kate Strome is a favorite of mine. She lives here in Chicago, and she writes just really fun, goofy young adult romance. And her new one, Prince in Disguise, is absolutely her at her best. It takes place in Scotland and follows a girl whose sister is the star of a reality show. So she has to go to Scotland for her sister's
wedding. A Scottish reality show?
It's an American reality show where they hid a prince or a royal member. It's called Prince in Disguise, but he's not a prince, which is a problem. They hid him in the South, and she fell in love with him on the reality show and then found out that he's royalty, and now the wedding is happening in Scotland. So it follows her little sister. It is filled with just great nerdy references. There's so many Disney references, so many classic literature. It's just so much fun, and I think it's going to be perfect. Christmas, you unwrap it, you snuggle up with a hot chocolate, and it's perfect. Yes, that one.
That's Portia Turner. She's actually on the line from the bookseller. It sounds like the bookstore is pretty busy today, Portia, in Lincoln Square with folks. What's on your always good list of maybe not new books that are coming out, but maybe you think are always great for young adults?
Yeah, so this one actually, I think, bridges that gap we were talking about earlier with young adults to adults. This is a book I think is great for everyone. It's called My Lady Jane, and it was written by, they call themselves the Lady Janies, Cynthia Hand, Brody Ashton, and Jody Meadows. And it is the story of Lady Jane Grey, who was queen for 8 days, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they took this horribly tragic story and thought, what if we wrote it as a comedy? And it is bizarre in the best way. It, again, has, for adults, I think it will appeal. It has Princess Bride references. It has Monty Python and the Holy Grail references. They break the fourth wall a lot and talk to you about the fact that they're messing with history, and it's just an absolute joy. It's a favorite of ours at the store. I think there are 3 recommendation cards on the shelf for it.
Wow, so okay.
That's one that I think is good for everyone. Like, anyone who reads it will find something in there they'll enjoy.
Nanette, what about for adults? What's on your always good list?
One that I really loved last year, this is one of my favorite books of last year, is To the Bright Edge of the World by Eowyn Ivey. It's set in late 19th century Alaska, and we've got Colonel Alan Forrester, and he's an explorer tasked with mapping the wilds of Alaska. It's a really unforgiving wilderness, very sparsely populated. And he's got a young wife, her name is Sophie, and she stays behind in Vancouver, and she becomes fascinated with the new art and science of photography. The book's presentation is absolutely stunning. It is a novel. It's told through journals, through narratives, but it also includes things like vintage maps, nature photographs, line drawings throughout the text. It's a literary novel, but it's very accessible. It's one of those books that has beautiful language, but the pacing isn't bogged down. And I have given this as a gift. My brother-in-law and his wife live in Alaska, and I gave this to them as a gift last year.
Last question for all of you guys. How often do you give holiday-themed books during the holidays? I feel like that's more of a maybe a younger kid thing than adults, but I wonder, Jesse, yes or no?
Sometimes, I think that's the answer. I like to anything that's new, I like to start getting new books in people's hands. But for some of the Christmas classics for kids, definitely, I mean, The Polar Express by Chris Van Allsburg. Originally published in 1985, it was a Caldecott Medal winner the following year, and then they turned it into the animated film, obviously, in 2004, starring Tom Hanks, and that one, it was nominated for, like, 3 Academy Awards. So, I mean, that is, like, a safe bet. And then How the Grinch Stole Christmas, I think, by Dr. Seuss, published in 1957.
Right, always the good classic, right?
Yeah, I mean, the classics. You can always give those to people. They will always enjoy them.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank Nanette Donahue from the Champaign Public Library. She's got a list of actually 8 books. Portia Turner from the bookseller, also another 7 or 8 books. And Jesse Wire from Bloomington Public Library. We've got all of their lists. We're going to put them online as guides for you, curated by some book experts here in Illinois. Nanette, Portia, Jesse, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
That does it for us today. I'm Nyla Boodoo, broadcasting from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism in downtown Chicago. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.